This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, a series of reflections on the season by members of the Northern Michigan University community and local and area residents. Today, Bruce Closser of Marquette reads A Christmas Carol, Part 1, by Charles Dickens.
A Christmas Carol, in prose, being a ghost story of Christmas. Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend and sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral, and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood, years afterward, above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather. The city clocks had only just gone 3, but it was quite dark already. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who in a dismal little cell beyond a sort of tank was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room, and so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel, the master predicted that it would be necessary for them to part. Wherefore the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed. "A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried the cheerful voice of Scrooge's nephew.
"Bah! Humbug!"
"Christmas? A humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure."
"I do. Merry Christmas! What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You are poor enough."
"Aha! Come, then! What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough."
"Bah! Humbug!"
"Oh, don't be cross, Uncle."
"What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? A time for balancing your books and having every item in 'em through a round dozen of months presented dead against you? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart."
"Uncle."
"Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way. Let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it? But you don't keep it."
"Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you."
"Well, I'm sure I've always thought of Christmas time when it's come around as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it." The clerk in the tank involuntarily applauded.
"Let me hear another sound from you, Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation."
"Well, you're quite a powerful speaker, nephew. I wonder you don't go into Parliament."
"Oh, don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow. I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?"
"Good afternoon."
"Well, I'm sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. But I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last, so a Merry Christmas, Uncle."
"Good afternoon."
"And a Happy New Year."
"Good afternoon."
His nephew left the room without an angry word notwithstanding. He stopped at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season on the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned them cordially.
"There's another fellow, my clerk, 15 shillings a week, a wife and family, talking about a Merry Christmas."
At last, the hour of shutting up the counting-house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If it's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient. That's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
But it's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning.
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern and went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. Nobody lived in them but Scrooge, the other rooms all being let out as offices. He fastened the door, walked across the hall and up the stairs, slowly too, trimming his candle as he went. All was as it should be. A small fire in the grate, spoon and basin ready, and a little saucepan of gruel upon the hob. As he sat down and threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment, and with a strange, inexplicable dread, that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound, but soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This might have lasted a half a minute or a minute, but it seemed an hour. The bells ceased as they had begun, together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some persons were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight toward his door. His color changed when, without a pause, it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Marley's ghost! The same face, the very same. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights, and boots. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, and it was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. How now? What do you want with me? Much. Who are you? In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. You are fettered. Tell me why. I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full, as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. Jacob! Oh, Jacob Marley, tell me more! Speak comfort to me, Jacob! I have none to give. It comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, to other kinds of men. Oh, captive, bound, and double-ironed, not to know that no space of regret can make amends for one life's opportunities misused. Yet such was I. Oh, such was I. But you were always a good man of business, Jacob. Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, benevolence, and forbearance were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Oh, why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down, and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise men to a poor abode? Were there no poor homes to which its light would have conducted me? Hear me, my time is nearly gone. I will, but don't be hard upon me. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me. Thank'ee.
You will be haunted by three spirits.
I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow, when the bell tolls one. Expect the second on the next night, at the same hour. The third upon the next night, when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and remember what has passed between us. The spectre floated out upon the bleak, dark night. Scrooge examined the door by which the ghost had entered. It was double-locked, as he had locked it with his own hands, and the bolts were undisturbed. He tried to say humba, but stopped at the first syllable. And being much in need of repose, went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep upon the instant. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out of bed he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. And then the hour bell sounded, with a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy one. Light flashed up in the room upon the instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn aside. There stood a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light. "Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?" "I am." The voice was soft and gentle, singularly low, as if, instead of being so close beside him, it were at a distance.
"Who and what are you?"
"I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?"
"No, your past." It put out its strong hand as it spoke, and clasped him gently by the arm.
"Rise, and walk with me."
The spirit made toward the window.
But I am mortal and liable to fall."
"Bear but a touch of my hand there," said the spirit, laying it upon his heart, "and you shall be upheld in more than this." As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall. They were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city, where shadowy passengers passed and repassed. It was made plain enough by the dressing of the shops that here, too, it was Christmas time again. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
"Know it? Why, wasn't I apprenticed here?"
They went in. At the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, sitting behind such a high desk that if he had been 2 inches taller he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement,
"Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again!"
Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed all over himself from his shoes to his organ of benevolence, and called out in a comfortable, oily, rich, fat, jovial voice,
"Yo there! Ebenezer! Dick!"
Scrooge's former self, now grown a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow apprentice.
"Dick Williams, to be sure," said Scrooge to the ghost. "Bless me, yes, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Poor Dick. Dear, dear."
"Yo-ho, my boys," said Fezziwig. "No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson."
Oh, you wouldn't believe how those two fellows went at it. They charged into the street with the shutters. 1, 2, 3. Had 'em up in their places. 4, 5, 6. Barred 'em and pinned 'em. 7, 8, 9. And came back before you could have got to 12, panting like racehorses.
"Hilio!" cried old Fezziwig, skipping down from the high desk with wonderful agility. "Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here. Hilio, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!"
Clear away? Oh, there was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away, or couldn't have cleared away, with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. Every movable was packed off, as if it were dismissed from public life forevermore. The floor was swept and watered, the lamps were trimmed, fuel was heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book, and went up to the lofty desk and made an orchestra of it, and tuned like 50 stomach aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the six young followers whose hearts they broke. And in came all the young men and women employed in the business. And away they all went, 20 couple at once, hands half around and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round in various stages of affectionate grouping, old top couple always turning up in the wrong place, new top couple starting off again as soon as they got there, all top couples at last, and not a bottom one to help them. When this result was brought about, old Fezziwig, clapping his hands to stop the dance, cried out, "Well done!" And the fiddler plunged his hot face into a pot of porter, especially provided for that purpose. But, scorning rest, upon his reappearance he instantly began again, although there were no dancers yet, as if the other fiddler had been carried home exhausted on a shutter, and he were a brand new man resolved to beat him out of sight or perish. And there were more dances, and there were forfeits, and more dances, and there was cake, and there was negus, and there was a great piece of cold roast, and there was a great piece of cold boiled, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer. When the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side the door, and shaking hands with every person individually as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everyone had retired but the two prentices, they did the same to them. And thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back shop. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene, and with his former self. "A small matter," said the ghost, "to make these silly folk so full of gratitude." "Small? Why, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 4 or 5, perhaps. Is that so much he deserves this praise?" "It isn't that. It isn't that, spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant, it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune." He felt the spirit's glance and stopped. "What's the matter?"
Nothing in particular."
"Something, I think."
"No. No, I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all."
He was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further, of being in his own bedroom. He had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a production of Public Radio 90, WNMU-FM, Marquette. If you'd like to hear today's feature again or share it with a friend, go to WNMUFM.org. I'm Nicole Walton. Happy Holidays.